Ladies and gentlemen, the captain has turned on the fasten seatbelt sign. If you haven't already done so, please make sure the volume of this podcast is set perfectly to your listening enjoyment. Please take your seat, whether that's on the treadmill, car, sofa, or bed, and buckle in for the last trip. My name is Jamie Beebe, and I'll be your tour guide, recreating someone's last days in paradise. On behalf of myself and everyone behind the scenes, please enjoy the Last Trip podcast. And because nobody likes a long flight to get to where they want to be, let's prepare for takeoff. In October of 2009, Michael Dixon spent a week visiting friends in New York City before heading into the second leg of his trip in Costa Rica. But after being there for just a few days, the 33-year-old British journalist vanished one night after leaving his hotel. The clues in this case are few and far between. His family thinks he's the victim of foul play, but Costa Rican authorities said there was an accident. Did the Costa Rican authorities sweep this case under the rug to protect their reputation for tourism, or is something else going on? A lot of my friends have been to Costa Rica and loved it. I went a few years ago, rented a car, and drove through the countryside. It was gorgeous. But there was definitely a dark underbelly that I experienced, mostly because I was traveling with my ex at the time. So we often stopped at dimly lit bars in the middle of rural areas where he drank excessively and bought drugs from scary-looking people. There were times I definitely didn't feel safe, and yet another reason for why I choose to travel solo now. But most of the places we went were amazing. I loved everything around Arenal Volcano and highly recommend seeing it if you have the chance. One thing I noticed was that the prices are much higher than other countries in the area, and most places were all about accommodating tourists. There were lots of yoga studios and vegan restaurants, and people live by the Pura Vida lifestyle. Pura Vida translates to pure life, and it sums up the country's laid-back and optimistic attitude. It's a lifestyle of slowing down, appreciating the moment, and connecting with nature. If you're headed to Costa Rica, there is something for everyone. It's known for the rainforests, wildlife, and beaches, but there's lots of adventure to be had as well. There's whitewater rafting, canopy tours, mountain biking, volcano hiking, rappelling down waterfalls, zip lining, and plenty of other adrenaline-pumping activities to fill your days. Michael started out his trip in La Fortuna, which is a small town near Arenal Volcano. Arenal was one of the most active volcanoes in Costa Rica until 2010, and although it's still active, it's currently dormant. But the best part about Arenal is that it's surrounded by the most amazing natural hot springs. And guys, those hot springs are well worth it. There are also some really cool attractions throughout Costa Rica. The Sloth Sanctuary in Cahuita charges $25 to see three-toed sloths. They have a mission of protecting and rehabilitating sloths, and since 1997 have hand-raised more than 100 orphans. One place that really piqued my interest was the Duran Sanatorium, an abandoned hospital that is one of the most haunted places in Costa Rica. The hospital was opened in 1918 to treat people with tuberculosis in a remote location with good weather, fresh air, and natural sunlight. It was staffed mostly by nuns, and it's said that their ghosts, along with the ghosts of the children who died there, still wander the grounds. The sanatorium was closed in the 1970s after Iguazu volcano erupted and ruined parts of the complex. But today, you can explore it if you dare. It's open from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Tuesday through Sunday, and there's a small entrance fee. In Monteverde, which Michael also visited, is the Ficus Lares, a cloud forest with a famous root bridge that extends across a creek. And that bridge is pretty scary. Most people venture out just far enough to get a good selfie, and only the truly adventurous go all the way across. For those who love scuba diving, you'll want to visit the Playa Blanca Underwater Museum. It's an underwater sculpture garden built by a local hotel developer to promote preservation and enjoyment of marine life. It's open to the public daily, although it's best to visit during the dry season because high winds and rainy weather can loosen the sand on the ocean floor and affect visibility. Overall, Costa Rica is a great place to visit, and they cater to tourism. They've had long-standing political stability and a commitment to democracy. They've advertised a safe and attractive destination for travelers for many years. The country actively promotes itself as a premier ecotourism destination, highlighting its natural beauty and biodiversity. In the early 20th century, Costa Rica began investing in tourism, building roads, hotels, and other luxury amenities. The government recognized the potential of tourism as a source of revenue and promoted to international visitors. The best time to visit Costa Rica is generally December through April, although the Caribbean side of the country is particularly sunny in October. There are 30 national parks, and about 5% of the world's biodiversity is in Costa Rica, including cloud forests, coral reefs, dry forests, and rainforests. One of the best things to do is hike to a waterfall. And one of the more famous ones is the Rio Celeste Waterfall in Tenorio Volcano National Park. And speaking of volcanoes, there are more than 60 of them, including 5 that are active, with Arenal being the most famous. Beyond the forests, the capital of San Jose is becoming a hotspot for foodies, with innovative chefs opening new restaurants and bars along with a vibrant craft beer scene. And if you're not into a rugged adventure vacation, but still want to see some nature, it's the perfect place for a relaxing spa getaway. The area around Arenal is famous for its luxury spas surrounded by natural hot springs with all sorts of 5-star accommodations. If those aren't good enough reasons to visit Costa Rica, the country is considered one of the happiest in the world according to the Happy Planet Index. But, like I always say, there is crime everywhere, and Costa Rica is no exception. Let's get to know Michael Dixon. Michael's parents, Lynn from England and Hubert from Jamaica, met at the World Health Organization in Geneva. It was love at first sight for the young couple, and they soon settled in France, where they raised Michael and his younger brother, David. Michael and David were extremely close growing up and continued to remain close as they became adults. They kept in touch often and visited each other regularly. Michael moved to Belgium as an adult and had been living there for the last 10 years before his travels to Costa Rica. He worked as a magazine editor for a U.S. magazine called RISI. It's a news service for the paper and pulp industry, a leading information provider for global forest products. After his disappearance, headlines referred to Michael as a missing journalist, likely to gain more attention toward his case. But his trip had nothing to do with work. He was on holiday, and there was no event in Costa Rica that could possibly have had to do with his duties at the magazine. Michael was well-liked by everyone he met. He was kind, noble, and very adventurous. He was a safe person and not prone to taking many risks. He also didn't take drugs or even drink much. He was the type of guy who was more into music and books than the party scene, often meeting people through his travels who would become lifelong friends. And those listening, who are frequent world travelers, especially solo travelers, know how important it is to make friends on the road. There are almost always other solo travelers, and it's much safer to link up with others when you're exploring the unknown. Michael was the type of guy to take group tours and make lots of friends at tourist attractions. He loved seeing new places, and before traveling to Costa Rica, he had already visited several countries in Europe, Africa, Southeast Asia, and the Caribbean islands. Michael had a backpacker style of traveling. He loved wandering cross-country, exploring as he went. He'd usually stay a few days in one place and then move on to the next. He chose Costa Rica as his destination because one of his close friends had been there and really liked it. But he didn't run off on a whim. Michael was a planner and carefully researched the country and planned out his trip. Michael's camera was found after his disappearance, and his family was able to go through and find photos from his last days. In photographs, he looks younger than his 30s. He has a shaved head, tiny glasses, a stubbled chin, sleepy eyes, and a goofy smile. He looked like the type of guy that was everyone's friend, and he was enjoying life to the fullest. Michael didn't have any apparent enemies in his life, especially in a country he had only been in for a few days. His family believes if his disappearance was due to foul play, it was likely a matter of being in the wrong place at the wrong time. And that makes me question whether Costa Rica is really as safe for tourists as it's reported to be. We'll find out after some messages from our sponsors. Michael visited his brother David in London just before starting his vacation. But at the time, no one would have guessed the visit would have been their last farewell. Leaving London, he went to New York for a week to visit some friends. There was nothing out of the ordinary or out of character in this visit. And by all accounts, Michael was happy and excited for the rest of his trip. On October 14, 2009, Michael arrived in Costa Rica. He sent an email to his family at 3:21 p.m. that said, "I'm currently on holiday in Costa Rica after spending a few days in New York. First time here, and so far, so good." He booked a room by phone for 2 nights at the Monte Real Hotel in La Fortuna. Monte Real is a gorgeous hotel with amazing views of Arenal Volcano. It's a family-friendly hotel located in the center of town but surrounded by forests that contain sloths, frogs, iguanas, squirrels, birds, and even monkeys. The rooms cost a little less than $100 a night, and there's a restaurant attached. And they'll help you book different types of tours while you're enjoying your stay there. Now, if you've listened to this podcast for a while, you know I always read the bad reviews. So here we go. Justin K. wrote in 2016 on a TripAdvisor review, "To avoid this hotel like the plague." He said the hotel is actually a motel. Volcano views are actually of a car park with a volcano in the background. Hotel guests are primarily comprised of backpackers and aimless wanderers. Decor is dated, limited, and unappealing. Shower dribbled water. Bathroom is foul. While balcony doors did close, they were significantly smaller than their frame, meaning hot air would continually flow into the room while the air conditioning was on. Well, that sounds fairly standard to me for the price, so I don't really see that as too bad of a review. Most of the other low reviews were complaints of the size of the room, the view not being close enough to the volcano, and the beds being uncomfortable. Going back to Michael's visit, the next day, October 15th, Michael sent another email saying, "Day 2, and unfortunately I had my bag stolen while traveling on a bus. It all happened so fast, I'm not sure myself what happened. I'm now in the town of La Fortuna, and the weather is rather lovely. Going to lounge poolside this morning before heading off to climb a volcano this afternoon. On the document front, I lost my Belgian ID card, but that shouldn't be too hard to replace." Michael didn't make a report of his bag being stolen, which wouldn't have done much for him anyway. Things like that are rarely looked into and would be next to impossible for him to get his stuff back. On the plus side, he seemed to stay positive about it and didn't seem like he lost too much. That same day, Michael visited the Baldy Hot Springs in La Fortuna. Now, I've been to Baldy Hot Springs, and wow. It's a thermal springs resort near the base of Arenal Volcano, with a bunch of different waterfalls and pools of different sizes and temperatures ranging from cool to hot. The water is heated by volcanic activity and filled with minerals believed to have various health benefits. It costs about $60 per person to get in, and definitely worth it. It's relaxing and beautiful with lush rainforests all around. And I'm sure it's exactly what Michael needed to relax after getting his bag stolen on the bus. The time I was there, we actually experienced a 7.0 earthquake. But because I was in the water, I barely felt it. On October 16th, Michael sent another email to his family saying, "Off now for a jeep boat jeep ride to Monteverde." The jeep boat jeep service is the quickest and easiest way to travel between Arenal and Monteverde. Because the area is so mountainous, there isn't a direct route between the two places, and the drive around Lake Arenal can take upwards of 5 hours. So the trip combines comfortable door-to-door service with a beautiful scenic cruise across the lake. Michael booked that ride with Eagle Tours. They picked him up at Hotel Monte Real for a 20-minute ride to the lake and then a 40-minute boat ride arriving in the Rio Chiquito area of Monteverde. Then back on the Jeep where they dropped him off at a hotel, but they couldn't remember which one when they were questioned later. That day, he checked into the La Pension Hotel in the Santa Elena area of Monteverde for 2 nights. La Pension is more of a hostel located in the heart of town. All the rooms are private, while some also have a private bathroom, and some have a shared bathroom. While most reviews were positive, most of the complaints were from around 10 years ago, and they were complaining about the cleanliness and frequent stray dogs. On October 18th, Michael made his way to Tamarindo and checked into the Hotel Villas Macondo at 3 p.m. The website describes the villas as a peaceful and charming place to relax in the environment of tropical nature. Located on a side street in Tamarindo, it's a 2-minute walk from the beach and downtown. They're known for their tropical garden filled with plants, trees, and animals like monkeys, iguanas, and birds, and the rooms go for just under $100 a night. As far as bad reviews, most of them complained about a musty smell or the rooms not being clean enough. But really, if you're staying in the tropics, most places will smell musty. And there were also a couple reviews that mentioned the location being too busy with lots of people around and very noisy vehicles. Michael told the receptionist at the hotel he planned to stay for 1 night. And about 3 hours after checking in, he went out, presumably for something to eat. And that's the last time the receptionist saw him. In fact, that's the last time there's a confirmed sighting of Michael at all. The next morning, October 19th, housekeeping entered his room and realized that not only had his bed never been slept in, but also his things were still there and he was only scheduled to stay for the 1 night, so he should have checked out. This concerned hotel management, so they sent a message to his work email, which was never read. On October 21st, the staff at Villas Macondo were very suspicious that Michael never returned for his things, so they notified the local police, the British Embassy, and 2 local hospitals in the area, Hospital La Anexión de Nicoya and Hospital de Liberia. But they didn't find any patient under Michael's name or any patient matching his description. The next day, the Costa Rican investigative arm, the OIJ, was notified of Michael's disappearance. At this point, authorities have been notified, but they haven't done much to look for Michael, possibly just expecting him to show back up eventually. But they also didn't notify his family or work that he was missing. So on October 26th, a week after he vanished, the alarm was finally sounded when Michael didn't show up for work as scheduled. The local police finally inspected his hotel room and determined there was no indication of robbery or forced entry into his room. His suitcase, toiletries, and valuables, including his cell phone, camera, and wallet, were all still there and perfectly organized. Because his bed had not been slept in, they determined he went missing sometime Sunday evening after leaving the hotel. Michael's family was immediately worried and jumped into action, with his brother David arriving in Costa Rica on October 29th and the rest of his family arriving on October 30th to search for him. They walked the streets, conducting informal interviews with everyone they met. They searched the coast and 2 estuaries outside of town, set up an air search by plane, used canines from a United States search team, checked the hospitals, police stations, and morgue, but there was no trace of Michael. They quickly learned that Michael wasn't the only tourist to go missing in the area, but rather he was the 3rd person to go missing in just the last 8 months. David Gimelfarb from Illinois went missing August 11th, and Craig Snell from Florida vanished February 18th. Neither of those men have ever been found. Authorities thought Michael drowned in the water because lifeguards were off duty over payment issues at the time of his disappearance, but his family did not believe he would have gone swimming after dark alone. Michael's family was able to get the Red Cross involved in the search, which renewed hope, but they stopped searching after only 2 days, finding nothing and not giving much effort. But not giving up, Michael's brother David tracked down more people in the area, learning of a possible timeline of the night Michael went missing. He found witnesses that said Michael was at a well-known local restaurant called El Pescador on the night of his disappearance, and he was surrounded by people who were known to be troublemakers in the local community. One person was a drug dealer named Maradona, and that's who David believed was involved in Michael's disappearance. He assumed that Michael was drugged and then escorted somewhere else, becoming the victim of violence and murder. The problem with the witnesses was that they constantly changed their stories. They would say one thing to the family, but when the police got involved, they would say something totally different. David felt the community didn't trust the police and were scared of what would happen if they spoke up. He said, as an outsider, it was very difficult and frustrating to get any answers at all. The family hired 3 different private investigators to help in the search. The first one took their money and ghosted them, while the other 2 didn't turn up any leads or new information. Michael's brother David was the last to leave Costa Rica on November 27th, no closer to finding him or finding any answers to what happened. David has continued to travel to Costa Rica through the years to search for answers about his brother, and in October of 2011, the family traveled there together for the 2nd anniversary of Michael's disappearance. But the case has gone completely cold. At the beginning of 2018, Michael's dad passed away without ever finding out what happened to his son. And on the 9-year anniversary, his family desperately renewed pleas to find out what happened. His mother, Lynn, said, "If you know something that could help me find out what happened to my dear son, I beg you with all my heart to come forward." But still, 15 years later, they have no clues and the case is at a standstill. Costa Rican authorities concluded that Michael's disappearance was due to accidental death. But with no evidence to support this, his family believes he was the victim of a violent crime. And with no clues or a body, I agree with them. It's unlikely Michael went off into the woods or swimming that night. I think he went to the restaurant and for one reason or another met with foul play and was murdered. Costa Rican police weren't much help in the search for Michael, and his family felt they were ill-equipped to deal with cases of missing tourists. They also felt that nobody wanted to take ownership of Michael's case because he was a British citizen, but had been working in Belgium for 10 years and went missing in Costa Rica. None of the countries stepped forward to help. David pushed to get the British police involved, but they said they couldn't unless they received an official request from the Costa Rican police. The Costa Rican authorities said the British was welcome to come, but refused to send an official letter inviting them over. So essentially, the family got the runaround and no one stepped up to help. But that wasn't the only issue Michael's family had with authorities. They were angry they weren't informed of his disappearance sooner. The UK Foreign Office was alerted 3 days after his disappearance, but they decided not to inform his family because they felt that people choose to go missing all the time. But to his family's point, this was extremely irresponsible. All of his belongings, his credit card, his passport, were still in his hotel room. No one who chooses to go missing leaves everything behind in their hotel room. This delay was critical and impeded any progress they could have made sooner to find Michael. And by the time the office admitted it was the wrong call, it was too late. David was also upset because the travel advisory should have been updated before Michael went on his trip to warn tourists of gang muggings and armed robberies in broad daylight, as well as stories of so many other tourists going missing and getting murdered in the area. He felt that if it had been updated, Michael may not have gone to Costa Rica. While we'll never know if that's true, the travel advisory was updated with the warnings shortly after Michael went missing. David has never stopped looking for his brother or keeping his name in the public. He has made t-shirts, released a record, posted consistently on Facebook and Twitter, all in an effort to raise awareness and find out what happened. He said, "Not a day passes when I do not miss Michael. I will never stop looking for him." His parents said that time has not helped heal their pain. They wondered daily what happened and if he suffered, and they try not to imagine the worst. But all manners of scenarios are constantly circling in their minds. Drowning, senseless violence, organ trafficking, robbery gone wrong. Without any answers, they're just left to wonder. The Dixons refuse to accept the conclusion from Costa Rican authorities that Michael drowned in the sea on that fateful night. Rather, they believe there is a more sinister explanation. The year Michael went missing, 12 foreign tourists were murdered or vanished without a trace. So there was and still is a problem. While I don't think Costa Rica is any more dangerous than most other parts of the world, the problem is that there is little to no help if someone does run into an issue while they're visiting. Authorities have promised to do more to protect tourists, but fresh cases like Michael's continue to turn up. The only hope Michael's family has is for someone to come forward with the truth. Like every country, Costa Rica has some customs you might not be used to. It's common for people to greet each other with a kiss on the cheek, even if they're meeting for the first time. This applies to both men and women and is a sign of friendliness and warmth. But note that women kiss women and women kiss men, but men do not kiss men. Instead, they either shake hands or give each other a one-armed hug. Costa Ricans often refer to themselves as ticos for men or ticas for women. This is a source of national pride and is often used in an affectionate way to refer to themselves and each other. If you're driving around Costa Rica, you have a good chance of getting lost. In many parts of the country, especially outside urban areas, street names are not commonly used for navigation. Instead, directions are often given based on landmarks, like left turn at the big mango tree or go straight until you see the church. Trust me, that's confusing. So make sure you have your GPS downloaded to view offline in case you don't have phone service. Another thing that might be confusing is that they often go by Tico time, meaning Costa Ricans are habitually late, usually 30 minutes or more, to dinner, appointments, get-togethers, everything except the movies and public health clinics. Costa Rican culture is historically male-dominant, similar to 1950s America, or current America, depending on where you live. So try not to be offended if a man stares at you, whistles, or tries out a few pickup lines. In most cases, the behavior is harmless and meant as a compliment. A good rule of thumb is to learn some phrases and slang before you travel to a country. Mae, spelled M-A-E, is a word that is used in the same way Americans might say dude. Quishiva is a commonly used phrase that's similar to awesome, but the literal translation means what goat. Despiche is a word that is used when everything feels like it's falling apart or is a mess, although the root of the word piche is slang for penis, which makes sense to me. It's common for multiple generations to live within one house and take care of one another. There's a high respect for elders in the culture, and family units are typically very tight-knit. Even as adults, people continue to live in their parents' house until they're married. And this is completely normal, regardless of their age. But let's get to the bottom line. Is Costa Rica safe to visit? Well, it depends on who you talk to. It's part of Central America, which can be considered a very dangerous region, but it is getting safer. That being said, Costa Rica's homicide rate skyrocketed in 2023. But your safety will depend on where you are and what you're doing. Costa Rica is generally safe for tourists. The Costa Rica Travel Advisory from the United States government is level 2, exercise increased caution. They note that while petty crime is the predominant threat for tourists, violent crime, including armed robbery, homicide, and sexual assault, also occur in areas frequented by tourists. But I'm a firm believer that common sense will go a long way in keeping you safe while you travel. If you're buying drugs or walking back to your hotel alone and drunk at 3 a.m., or hiking deep in a forest alone, you're not using common sense to keep yourself safe. Always stay aware of your surroundings. Don't bury your face in your phone while you're walking around. Don't leave your belongings laying around. Don't wear expensive jewelry and watches or flash large amounts of money. And if you are in a robbery attempt, never resist. If you give them what they want, you're less likely to be met with violence. Other tips include avoid walking, jogging, or sightseeing alone in secluded areas, especially at night. Again, guys, that's common sense. Be sure to use official transportation only. This can include taxis or Ubers, and Uber is usually cheaper. Also, if you encounter police in Costa Rica, most are fairly trustworthy compared to nearby countries. If you're pulled over, you don't have to pay them off to stay out of jail. They will take bribes, but they aren't necessary. And in some cases, if you pretend you don't understand them, they'll likely let you go with just a warning. But most importantly, no matter where you're traveling, make sure you inform someone about your plans before going anywhere. Tell someone reliable where you're going and what you'll be doing and when to expect you back. And my number one tip to staying alive on vacation is to pay attention to your gut. If something doesn't feel right, it isn't. Michael Dixon went missing in Tamarindo, Costa Rica on the evening of October 18, 2009. He was 5 feet 6 inches tall with a slender build, brown eyes, short dark hair, and balding. He had light brown skin. He spoke English and French, but had limited Spanish. At this point, the Dixon family just wants closure, not justice. Most crimes in Costa Rica can't be brought to trial after 10 years anyway. If you have any information about that night or what happened to Michael Dixon, you can email findmichaeldixon@gmail.com or reach out to the OIJ on their confidential line at 800-8000-645. That's 800-8000-645. And finally, remember to leave a review and rate this podcast 5 stars if you like the show, or hell, even if you don't. But either way, feel free to let me know what you think. Please follow The Last Trip on Instagram at The Last Trip Crime Pod and subscribe on Patreon to support the show. You'll get extra research, videos, photos, and updates, and even learn more about my personal travels. That's patreon.com/The Last Trip Podcast. I'm Jamie Beebe, bringing you your last trip and signing off until the next one. Thanks for listening.